In this week's Foot Weekly, formations and tactics, why you should be playing five at the back. After an outstanding performance in Berlin, we talk to the rising stars of foot commentary. In other ascending news, is the market on the way up? And the most players we've ever reviewed in a single episode. Hello and welcome to week 36 of Foot Weekly. I'm Ben and Horace returns.
Hello.
He's back because we've got some serious team of the season action this week. We're going to run through that all in the second half. Three team of the season squads. But yeah, we've just finished watching a video of Francesco Totti scoring 10 of his best goals.
Yeah, it's like a compilation of some of the most impressive goals that he's scored over the course of his career, which has been obviously ridiculously long and looking like he's retiring this summer.
Yeah, I think this is his last game this weekend.
Yeah.
So it'd be quite sad to see him go. He's been playing pretty much since I can remember. So, and I'm sure many of you, that's the same. So, a little tribute from Foot Weekly to Francesco Totti.
Yeah, well, and it kind of got us both thinking a bit about what a potential legend card of him might look like. And we were thinking definitely would have the chip shot trait after watching those goals. He just seems to have this, like, uncanny ability to spot when the keeper is, like, even a foot out of position.
Yeah, I feel like if you're a keeper coming up against him, you just would not look forward to it, because if you even stray slightly out of your goal, he's going to put it over you.
Yeah, but I think, I really hope that EA do sort out a license to get him next year, because I just think he'd be like Del Piero, but just way stronger.
And
I think,
hopefully he would have the four-star skills as well. Yeah. He obviously has, I would have thought he'd have five-star weak foot. But yeah, just a phenomenal player and someone you just love to see as a legend. Probably quite expensive, of course. But
yeah, I'm sure.
Especially like legends when they first come into the game are always more expensive. Well, we've got plenty of good cards to discuss. Many of them actually may well be better than a lot of the legend cards on FIFA 17, actually. We've got those three team of the season squads to run through. EA for the first time splitting up that Eredivisie and Belgian Pro League.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite an interesting one.
It's quite interesting. And I think before that, we've obviously just had the tail end of the Premier League team of the season. I know you've played with some players from that team of the season. And we'll look forward to hearing about one of those in the review section. But in terms of Sigurdsson, obviously this week, the tournament prize. How did things go for you with that?
Yeah, pretty. I didn't have that much time to play in the week this week. So I played one game in the, because it was split into two tournaments this week. Monday, Tuesday, you had a team where you could only have one special card, and then there were no requirements on Wednesday, Thursday. I played one game on like Monday evening or something. So obviously didn't win in that time. Mm-hmm. Then had a bit of time on Wednesday evening and won the tournament first time, which I was quite happy with.
Nice.
But I had a pretty spectacular game in the final, actually. I was 4-1 down at half time, which is not a good place to be.
Yeah.
my opponent seemed decent. It wasn't one of those where everything just fell apart and like a pretty terrible player gets lucky. Like he seemed like he knew what he was doing. But rather than quitting out, because like it was the final of the tournament, I kept going, persevered, pulled it back to like 4-3 in I think the 70th minute. My opponent got a fifth goal, and I was thinking, oh, okay, that like almost from kickoff after my third. So I was thinking, that's it. But then I've managed to pull it back with goals in like the 85th and 90th, take it to extra time at 5-all, and I ended up winning 7-6 in extra time. So like, I felt like I really deserved the Sigurdsson card after that final.
Wow.
And it was a pretty fun game. I'm not sure I'm going to use the Sigurdsson card.
Yeah.
That being said,
I mean, I'm on a streak of winning these tournaments like four times, first time now. because my brother is off at uni, so he doesn't have his console with him at uni. So I've been signing into his account, and I don't think he listens. So the surprise will still be there when he gets to sign in at some point. But basically, this has meant that I've like won the team of the season cards for him. So he's got like a pretty basic team. So it's going to be quite cool for him to like actually try out some team of the season players, even though they're not especially good ones. But yeah, I managed to win it on his account on like Monday both weeks, and then like have just like won it first time on mine. So it's been a pretty successful 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's interesting with these, because obviously you expect the tournaments to be a lot more competitive than just the regular daily knockout.
Yeah.
I mean, in general, the daily knockout, certainly the first couple of rounds, tend to be a kind of much less competitive than weekend league games. But with these, obviously, a lot of people who normally just auto-qualify are playing the tournament in order to win those players. Obviously, they can only win it once, normally. So by the end of the like times frame for each tournament, it should be slightly easier. But in spite of all those kind of extra players being in there, it didn't feel like the average quality of opponent I was facing was like dramatically higher than in a normal daily knockout tournament.
I think the only thing I'd say is like when I was playing on my account, where I have obviously a very strong team, it was I like flew through it like pretty much rage quits until the final. But in on my brother's account, where he had a really basic sort of, he'd done a decent hybrid, but you know his best players were Kante and Martial, obviously very effective. But you can see the kind of price we're looking at here, like 25k, and it was a real struggle both of the times. I think I was kind of fortunate to progress. It was only because like I like set up very sensibly, like I'd change the formation every time I went in to like counteract the opposition every time.
Yeah,
because I knew that they, in even though this team that he had was obviously no special items. And same with the opponent, would only have one. They still were much better sides than the ones that he had. So I think actually if you're a beginner player or someone less experienced, you probably still find it pretty difficult to win.
Certainly. It is a challenge. And I think, well, for every, whatever, 16 people that enter the tournament, technically only one is going to go through and win it.
Yeah, exactly.
So it is a tricky thing. You mentioned tweaking kind of your team setup to counteract your opponent there a bit, and I know in the weekend league recently you've been running a slightly different formation to usual.
Well, talking about counteracting, it's actually a very good way of looking at it. Probably inspired by Mourinho's success of late, I kind of been thinking about. Well, I've been thinking about this for a while, and you may have heard me mention it before about how effective the 5-2-1-2 is. Basically, because the three, I've always noticed that the 3-4-2-1 actually is very effective. So you get your three centre backs defending against narrow formations. Mm-hmm. Works really well. But the problem is with that is that if you play against someone with the 4-3-2-1, so that's like you've got your left forward, right forward and striker, then your three centre-backs are really going to struggle.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of pulling out wide, it stretches your defence. But if you go for a five at the back, it's much more solid.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got that left back and right back to cover as well. But I know a lot of you may be thinking, this is horribly sweaty, Ben. Not what we expect from you. Because I've really avoided the five at the back. I really don't like to sort of
sweat it up.
Yeah, sweat it up, stifle my opponents. Like, it's not really, like, I like, you know, it's for fun.
It's always more fun to play a game of FIFA that's kind of end-to-end, lots of chances for both people. But ultimately, in that situation, there's more chance, probably. Like, you've got less control of the game.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the real interesting thing about this was actually it's not that much more negative than you'd think.
Mm.
Because all you've got is right back and left back are slightly further pushed forward. And your CDM is just dropped slightly further back compared with the 4-1-2-1-2. Or the 4-3-1-2. So if you think about it, you're not actually, if anything, you've got two, a right back and left back who are further forward and the CDM is further back. So you're actually, if anything, maybe you're slightly more attacking, you could even argue.
Yeah.
So I think that there's something wrong with the AI positioning of a CDM.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you look at a lot of teams, like CDMs almost play like a semi-quarterback role, especially if they're the only one sitting in front of a defence. But that just doesn't happen in FIFA. That CDM goes wandering and players don't fill in. So basically the best way to make sure that you have a player sitting there, almost like a proper CDM, with a sort of low attacking work rate, if you like, is to play with that extra centre-back and put that extra centre-back on aggressive interceptions and then also put them on join the attack.
Interesting. Yeah, I kind of always shied away from using the join the attack instruction, partly because I was sort of worried about being left short-handed in defence. Mm. How much do you find that they actually move forwards with that?
Well, I think there's a bit of a difference because you've got also got players striker, which is the one where they properly go all the way up the pitch and players a striker. But the join the attack just means they get a bit more freedom in their positioning. I mean, you know how static those centre-backs are generally. And actually, one of the big things in previous years was like the work rate of your centre-back. People often used to sort of want players with like low attacking work rate on the centre-back because they would push forward more. But I think this year they've really like crack down on that, so the centre-backs are very static. But what that will allow is even a player who has not much attacking work rate, if you like, will still like push up a little bit just into the midfield, especially if you're like a counter-attacking opportunity maybe. But I've never had them, you know, really push up far up the pitch into an attack. They don't join the attack properly. Like, you won't see them actually like making a run to the box or going out wide, or they seem to position themselves quite centrally and not too attacking.
Yeah, so it's almost like they're kind of are in the position that the CDM would normally occupy, but without the license to go further forward that a CDM has.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like everything's shifted back slightly. And it is very similar to like a sweeper.
Mm-hmm.
Although you won't fight. So the key thing about this is it's not a sweeper because you want that player to like move into the midfield to make the interception and to fill the space behind the two centre mids you have. Because otherwise, there's big space for them to run into.
Yeah.
And what I think also works quite well is obviously loads of people play this narrow formation. And if you have the opportunity to go forwards with your right back and left back and there's cover behind them, that's really effective. Like you see like Tottenham and Chelsea doing it quite effectively this year. So that's kind of what you're going for. Your left back and right back are actually often really open.
Yeah.
Especially for playing someone with a narrow formation.
Well, it would be really interesting to see if the kind of FIFA meta game develops a bit like sort of Premier League football has this year, where Chelsea, Tottenham have switched to kind of 3/5 at the back formations. Arsenal did it over the last couple of months. I'd be intrigued to see that because I've been also trying to fiddle with the formation I use. And I've got kind of two teams I tend to rotate, like a fairly strong Serie A team and a very strong Premier League team. And the Serie A team, I run the 4-1-2-1-2 narrow. But the Premier League team, I run the 4-3-3 false nine with Zlatan as the kind of false nine tying the team together just because he's so kind of good all round and on the ball. But a bit like what you were saying with the 5-2-1-2 being like a morphed 4-1-2-1-2, the false nine formation is like a 4-1-2-1-2 that's been morphed in the other direction. It's just been made wider up at the top. So you've got kind of the same midfield setup of two CMs and a CDM. The false nine player is sort of like your cam, and your wingers are kind of like the strikers, but they've just been forced out wide. Because they are technically the furthest forward players.
Yeah, yeah. If you look at the way it's set up, it does actually show them to be the first forward, doesn't it? Yeah.
And it's quite an interesting setup. I find against people who are playing very compact, it can be really useful to use that width to kind of try and break people down. But equally, I do find myself quite often in game just switching back to the 4-1-2-1-2.
Yeah.
Just because a lot of the time you can't actually exploit the width that much, like it's not that useful to have the ball in wide areas.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because we got a question, didn't we, about this. I know we're going to go to our dedicated post section later, but I think we should cover Nick's question now, because he says why is wing play so difficult in FIFA 17? Surely EA will try and rectify this for FIFA 18.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have seen kind of dominance of narrow formations in general, particularly in the competitive game, but also if you play in terms of esports level, but also if you just play weekend league a lot, the majority of people you come up against are 4-3-1-2 or 4-1-2-1-2.
Yeah.
And I think it's not that there's a lack of good winger cards. Like a lot of the best cards in the game are left wing or right, left sided or right sided players.
Well, hence a lot of people starting in the wider formations.
Yeah, exactly. Lots of people use either a 4-3-2-1 or a 4-3-3 variant and then just change formation in game.
Like a mule formation.
It is something, it kind of ties in partly, you were talking about the defending AI, and I think it's that if you're playing out wide, you need to beat a man and then cover quite a lot of ground to get into a properly dangerous area, whereas if you're just on the top of the D, on the top of the area, the edge of the area, do a bit of trigger dribbling, you beat your man and you can shoot
or like straight away, instant long shot if they don't close you down, and then if they close you down you do the 1-2 and then you're in.
It's just that the way the game is set up, there's so much more danger in narrow positions. So it's just better to have more players in the narrow positions. Like you can have a wing. I've tried to play kind of down the wings a fair bit. I've got second player of the month, Son, and one to watch, Mane, as my left and right winger at the moment, who are both very strong players. But it's sort of every now and again, you play against an opponent who stands off a lot and you can whip in really dangerous crosses if you've got a good player in the air. Or you can beat a man, but then you just find yourself kind of on the touchline and you're just a little bit wider than you would have been had that player been playing as a striker.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the point, isn't it? Especially if you put drift wide on your strikers, if you've got two striker formation, your strikers are basically going to wander into wing positions, but like inside wing positions, which are kind of more effective than actually having genuine wingers. And I always find that like it feels like the only thing you can do is cross the ball in, like, well, that's a, because the driven pass from wide areas is so effective at getting sort of tap in goals that that's what everyone does. And it's really hard. I mean, you can cut in and do skills like you used to be able to, but it's not really that effective.
Yeah.
And you don't really seem to put yourself in a position that creates a good shooting opportunity when you do that. And I think it's partly because of AI blocking and the way that the AI has such a large kind of area of influence, AI defenders. Like, if you're up against Smalling and he's just sidestepping, you just can't like do anything about that. Like,
yeah.
You can't shoot around him. And when you're shooting at an angle, that's going to be really difficult. And you can try and move them, but to be honest, the way that the AI works, again, they're just going to be so static that you can't really force them to make any kind of movement that you could go around. So the easiest way is just to use your pace and then whip it into your striker and tap in. So, yeah, it's disappointing, I think.
It is a tricky one. And I think in terms of it, the phrasing of Nick's question, it is just the way... I think it's more to do with the way defending... is programmed rather than anything specifically to do with the way the FIFA metagame is developed. I think the FIFA metagame is developed as a result of what is most effective this year. And so I think EA probably will try to change that for FIFA 18 because they'll be they'll very much be aware of like the formations that people play. And stuff. So maybe we'll see them like go a long way the other way, and kind of 4-3-3 formations will be really, really effective. Hopefully they get some kind of balance and both are viable ways of running your team.
I think I always like was a huge fan of wing play, and this is why I was like, I think the 5-2-1-2 is kind of like meant I can play narrow but have some width at the same time, because I think I always want to like cut in, and so I'm looking to get Marcelo in because he's like 4-star skiller, so at least I can do some cutting in maybe with him. But the thing is, when you're playing these narrow formations, like, it doesn't feel realistic to the real football.
Yeah.
Narrow formations are really unpopular in real football because you need to use wide areas to kind of exploit the space.
Yeah.
So it feels very odd. Like, it feels quite arcadey to play in that way. I think as a result, surely they'll be looking at it as something that they need to improve on for next year's game.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it is an e-sport, and so it is its own game. But also, it's nominally a football simulator. And Ultimate Team is meant to be an arcadey game mode, but it's meant to be an arcadey football game mode. So it does just feel like you're kind of missing out some of the potential for what makes football so good and such a great spectator sport.
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing bits of trickery down the wing. Mm-hmm. If that's not the most effective way to play, you're not going to see it.
Game. And actually, talking about narrow formations and their effectiveness, I mean, I've mentioned this before about the five at the back combating that 4-3-1-2 so effectively. The great thing about the five back is it kind of mimics that formation attacking wise. It has the same cam and two strikers, but has a left back and right back who, like, you feel more comfortable pushing forward with to create the width. But also, in a defensive setup, that centre back pushing out, he's going to push up and hopefully go and combat that cam that the opposition has, and then the two centre-backs who are slightly wider should be able to cover the two strikers, and so it's really, really effective against the cam, striker setup you face so often.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, just to kind of like wrap it up on the formation stuff, if any of our listeners were looking to set up a team in the 5-2-1-2, do you have any kind of pointers in terms of instructions, specific types of player to use in the different positions?
Yeah, I suppose, obviously, there's the thing about the centre-back, which is really, really crucial. But in terms of other things, I wouldn't bother, certainly initially, setting overlap on either of the left-back or right-back.
Mm-hmm.
You can set that half-time if you need a bit more support down the wings. But I'd definitely stay forward, get into the box on the cam, stay back, stay on the edge of the box on the two centre-mids, because you still need a bit of cover in the central area. And then on the strikers, often either I sometimes do drift wide, but maybe have one on drift wide, one on getting behind, one or both, I think, press back line.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, works really effectively. And then in terms of players, I like to have sort of semi wingers as strikers. So, I mean, you know, not everyone can get these players, but El Shaarawy and Ronaldo are the two that I'm playing with. And they're obviously both 5-star skills. They both play like wingers, but they're really good finishers. So they're really good. And then in CAM, that position, I've got generally had a legend just to link people up.
Mm-hmm.
But you want someone with a bit of presence, really good passing and shooting, of course.
Yeah, so some kind of like physical strength, but yeah. also technically very
strong. Sort of like Bergkamp is who I have at the moment. And then two centre mids, box-to-box type of players, but ideally with a more defensive work rate if you can. And like a bit of physical presence is needed there as well. Oh, and also as a final aside, many people will be thinking very counter-attacking formation. I've actually found that it like dominates possession. I wouldn't suggest using really counter-attacking custom tactics.
Mm-hmm.
Look at something fairly balanced, and don't make the team width too narrow as well. It's probably my key advice. But yeah, apart from that, give it a go. Let us know how you found it. And have you got any tips on the false nine?
Yeah, particularly in terms of the false nine player themselves, because I think they're kind of the linchpin that holds the team together. I mean, I mentioned I've got Zlatan there. I think you don't need to use him, obviously, but you definitely want someone with some physical presence, kind of good strength, decent height, because you want to be able to play goal kicks. You want them to be a kind of target point for goal kicks if necessary. And also, they'll be playing with their back to goal quite a lot, I find, that player. Mm. Often you're kind of bouncing passes in off them from your midfielders.
Mm.
So it's quite important that they are good at passing and won't immediately concede possession if Smalling breathes on them. because that player will come under quite a lot of pressure. In terms of your wingers, I keep them... I think I don't set them to... I think I just have balanced width on them, plus getting behind. And my CDM stay back, fullbacks stay back. Both my centre mids, I sometimes set one to get forward if I'm under pressure, or not under pressure, but if I'm behind in the game. And in terms of the player type for them, I've currently got team of the season Eriksen as one of my centre mids, and I had his third inform card before that. I just love the 5-star weak foot, 4-star skills combination, but you want at least one of your centre mids to be someone who can get goals, because a lot of the time, certainly the way I play it, you are kind of dominating possession, and the chances can fall to almost anyone in your front six.
Mm.
And so you want at least one of your midfielders to be a very clinical finisher, which he is.
I once had a sort of five-game period with the new false nine formation that I set up with Luis Gustavo in CDM.
Mm.
And this was like a few months ago now, and Luis Gustavo scored the most goals in the first five games. Because just like all the other players were sort of buzzing around creating things, and then he'd just come into the edge of the box and just like tuck it away like every time.
Yeah, yeah. So you definitely need to be prepared to shoot with almost any of your attacking players. So I think you want kind of all-rounders, or not necessarily all-rounders, but certainly well-balanced players across the midfield. And then kind of your wingers want to be almost kind of striker winger hybrids, sort of left forward, right forward style players, much more than left mid, right mid.
Okay, very useful stuff. So coming up shortly, we've got an interview with, an exclusive interview in fact, with the pair that won EA's commentary competition, which is going to be pretty interesting as well, I think. But let's move on to the rest of the posts that we've received. Brand new section, of course, well, relatively new, first debuted last week, so your first time in the post section.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Got some interesting questions from people.
Yeah, why don't you kick us off and bring us the first question? I think it's actually one that's come in via email. You can email us, footweekly@mail.com.
Yeah, so this is a message from Dom Deck, who he's got a kind of more of a pointer or a tip than a question. And he was talking about using the Team of the Season upgrade SBCs that are being released for each of the Friday Team of the Seasons. So we've got the Bundesliga one out at the moment. There was the Premier League one last week, and he was talking specifically about the Premier League one.
Mm.
And he was talking about using that in combination with the gold upgrade SBC that's just always out, where you can turn a squad of 11 non-rare golds into a couple of rare gold players, to just recycle players and massively, well, not massively, but fairly significantly reduce the cost of the Premier League or whatever league is currently active premium SBC. And by doing that, you can just kind of go over that SBC loads and loads of times. And for him, at least, he says, he doesn't say how many times he did it. I'm guessing he must have done it maybe over 100 times from the list of players that he allegedly got. He says he packed Azpilicueta, Eriksen, Herrera, Lukaku, Walker, and Keane and Mane twice each. from doing this, which is a pretty impressive list of blues to have pulled. And I mean, I can believe it's possible, but I think you would have to have done it a lot of times, and it would have been quite expensive.
Like, your average player, like, is going to have to do it a lot of times to do that. And I think, from my perspective, I was looking at it, and even if you upcycle from non-rares, even from silvers, the cost, the amount of coins you're actually putting into that, because they're not all going to be untradeable, actually ends up being quite high. I think what I did instead was just sold all my rare players that I had, and that got me like 130k, because it was like 1.3k per rare card, whatever their rating.
The peak of things, kind of second half of last week for the Premier League. It's a lot lower now for the Bundesliga because there's just less demand. Yeah. But for the Premier League, the just like regular 75 rare gold cards were going for, well over a K. And I think there were basically two ways of approaching this SBC. Either you can just take the kind of guaranteed return approach of just sell on all your cards that are relevant to it, because you can get a lot more for them than you normally could. Mm. Or you can just gamble if you want, essentially, which is what you're doing with that SBC. You're just paying your gold cards in to potentially get a team of the season back. And you did have a much higher chance of getting a team of the season limiting it to Premier League. Like, I did do it maybe, I did like 30, 40, and I did pack for Tongan, Azpilicueta and Keane, which is decent.
But I think the thing to bear in mind is that 100 players that I sold, that would only do me
like
10 at the most. So obviously, if you upcycle, you can maybe make a bit of a saving, but even non-rares aren't super cheap just at that time. So yeah, go ahead and do these, especially if you've got a team that you're going to fit these players into. I think it makes sense, but I'm definitely like, would be very wary of doing it if you don't have other untradeables or other players which you'd use with players from that league.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, for me, the decision to do a few of them was because I've got already a second player of the month Son, a player of the month Zlatan, an untradeable one to watch Mane. I've got a bunch of untradeables in the Premier League, so I thought I'm always going to be using a Premier League team for the rest of this year, so I might as well see if I can pick up some much cheaper team of the season items.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
In saying that, I did do it like a couple of times and got keen. So
I
mean, I'm saying don't do it, but I'm also saying, you know, have a flutter. Why not? Why everyone plays the game, isn't it?
So. Yeah, exactly. I may do a couple of Bundesliga ones just because you never know.
Curiosity.
Yeah. Thanks again for that email from Dom Deck. If you want to get in touch via email, it's footweekly@mail.com. Or, of course, you can get in touch on Twitter. I think, Ben, you've got a Twitter question.
Yeah, this one's from Swiss Chicken HD. And actually, to just mention, you can tweet us at Foot Weekly Pod. And if you don't manage to get your question in this week, then I'm sure we'll try and get to it in a future week. So please do carry on submitting those questions. We always read them all and are very interested whether we talk about them or not. So Swiss Chicken HD asks whether prices are too high right at the moment for Team of the Season players, especially comparing that to sort of earlier years. And the second part of his question we'll cover it in the second half, because he asks what is our favourite Team of the Season players so far have been.
Yeah, so I mean, it's quite a broad question. It kind of leads us on towards talking about the market in general. But specifically, starting on the prices of the Bundesliga players, they're kind of way higher than we might be expecting. I think, Ben, you've got a bit that you can of an explanation that you can have for that in terms of the comparison with the Premier League players last Friday. But yeah, just one thing that I noticed yesterday, I was on Friday night, I was on my console during all the lightning rounds that came out for the Bundesliga. And when it came to the ultimate packs at, I think, 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. UK time, they didn't sell out within the hour. And when you look at the Premier League equivalent lightning round, like the first time the ultimate packs were out for Premier League tots, they sold out in like 5 minutes. And I don't think it was until, like, EA continued doing those lightning rounds throughout the weekend. It wasn't until Sunday that it started being that the ultimate packs weren't selling out. Whereas with the Bundesliga, just this first round of them didn't sell out. So I think there's just a lot less willingness in the community to spend their money on those packs. Like, kind of so many people will have had, like, X amount they were happy to spend in tots and would have spent it during Premier League It's kind of the highest demand team of the season.
Yeah, and also if you looked at that team of the season, all those players were good players.
Like, yeah, there was almost I think I remember looking at it and thinking I would be happy to pack and use pretty much every single one of them.
Yeah, which is really rare, and that's definitely not the case for this Bundesliga team. So that's obviously going to put people off. But I think it's interesting, if you, it's not just about buying packs, it's also if you think about the all the weekend league rewards people had saved up and used for the Premier League, Foot Economist did a sort of survey on Twitter. 4,900 people responded, and I think it's about 4 or 5% of people had any pack saved after last week, which of course means that the amount of players coming onto the market, Bundesliga team of season players, is going to be way lower than with the Premier League. And so, well, basically the prices are obviously going to be higher as a result because demand's still high. It's only the second big team of the season. So that's an interesting point, and maybe suggests it might be worth opening up any packs you have, with those players actually being worth more than you'd probably expect, especially in coming weeks.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen like some really like surprisingly high prices from a lot of those Bundesliga players, kind of Keita, Thiago, are both well above 500k. And I think several cards went extinct for a while last night just because there was such little supply on the market.
Yeah. Like Modeste, for example, I remember
Modeste, Stindl, possibly Werner, I think all went extinct. And I think it's not actually necessarily that the players are overpriced by the market, but it's that there is a lot of buying power in the market this year. Mm. Like, there are a lot of people who've been holding off buying their players because they wanted the right time to buy. So the market's been kind of really unsure of itself because we've got no way of actually like tracking how much capital there is in the market, like how many coins everyone has. But we know from the prices that cards were going for before everything crashed pre-team of the season that like there must be a lot of coins in the market this year.
And I think the other point to make is that you can't underestimate the factor, weekend league factor. People at this stage of the game normally in previous years were kind of looking to make that end game team, and that was all they were kind of interested in doing. That team wouldn't necessarily need to be the most competitive ever. A lot of people towards the end aren't being super competitive. They just want to play with the players they enjoyed that year, their team of the season versions. But if you look at what impact Weekend League has had this week, a lot of people seeing that crash last Friday and maybe getting stung by it even realised that this Friday there could well be another crash as another team of the season comes and people open loads of packs like they did the week before. And that obviously meant that loads of people ended up buying their teams at that point when the new team of the season dropped. But actually the sort of amount of players coming out wasn't enough to force prices down at all. And that just led to prices kind of rising quite a bit. So I think what you're actually seeing is a slight rise in prices. I think they'll come back down, and they'll definitely come back down once we come into the other team of the seasons, because you're just going to be more cards available for people to use their money on. But it looks like there's definitely been a significant rise just because everyone's buying those teams for the final weekend league of the month to get that monthlies kind of bracket that they want.
Yeah, true. And that's actually a really good point about how there are only two top tier team of the season squads out at the moment. So that demand for those players, for kind of the top tier team of the season cards, is very concentrated on those two, and that will be diluted slightly, we assume, when we get Serie A, La Liga, and to an extent, Liga.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. So I think in summary, I know we like to kind of wrap it up. If you're looking to buy players, there's a possibility prices will drop back in the coming kind of end of weekend league kind of time.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other hand, you're probably really looking only in a few weeks' time to get much better value for money, because there'll be other cards around on the market.
Yeah, and equally, if you're waiting for prices to be the Premier League tots to be as low as they were last Friday, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think
they're going to drop that low.
I think that was a sort of one-off event, essentially just caused by this sort of huge volume of packs being opened.
Yeah, exactly. And coming up after the break, which we'll be having shortly, we will be taking a much closer look at the players in the Team of the Season squads released this week, as well as this week's Bumper Team of the Week, and some quite interesting player reviews from the two of us. But before that, Ben, we've got the interview that you did.
Yeah, so I had the fortunate opportunity of speaking to Brad and Rich, who are the winners of EA's commentary competition, and had the opportunity to commentate on a game in the Foot Champions Series finals in Berlin. Before I chat to them, we can have a little listen to a clip of them commentating on that game.
Ronaldo, Modric, out to Neymar. Maybe one more goal in this, just to say this game's over and the first 3 points are mine in this opening game. What a ball this could be. Modric through, and there's Suarez!
Absolutely fantastic bit of skill there on that side, as we see somebody celebrating in the background. Modric, a couple of step-overs, gets into that area where you can deliver a really deadly cross, and low-driven pass across the goal. Quite fortunate how it went in, but it's 3-1, and you've got to say it's game over.
I'm sure he won't be complaining how that one goes in. Goals win you games, and that's 3-1. Literally minutes left or seconds in-game FIFA time. And, you know, it's been a... seen four goals. Not too much to cheer about in the first half, but, you know, the game came alive in the second half, and I think this one's going to be over with now.
Yeah, I think Salso will be quite disappointed after taking the lead early on. I believe it was 25 minutes. He went 1-0 up, but second half performance, it's not really been there.
Hello, both of you.
Hello.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too.
Cheers for having us on.
No problem. It's a pleasure. And I think we'll start with Rich. You submitted a video, presumably, to the competition. Talk us through sort of how it worked. And what was the process?
So it were all to do with the EA Sports The Pitch. They held a competition called the Commentator Cup. So you had to send in a minute and a half entry, basically commentating over the Paris final, Sihan against TASS, and just giving your interpretation of the commentary. So we did that. A couple of days later, we got a email back saying, congratulations, you made it through to the final four down in London. So we travelled down in London, did a bit of commentary with it was like the competition side of it against three other duos. Managed to win that in the final, 29-28. And then off to Berlin we went. We're very, very fast-paced.
Great. And obviously you ended up going to Berlin. Brandon, what was the atmosphere like when you were there?
It's a bit of a weird one, really, to be honest, because, you know, you're used to just seeing these players or watching the event yourself. But to actually be there and stuff, see how it all works and that, it's kind of a surreal, you know, you're surrounded by big YouTubers. And to be part of that broadcast team of, you know, the two boys, Jimmy Conrad, Spencer, Joe Miller, Lee Smith, you know, you kind of just feel very privileged, and it's one of them things you just want to try and take in as much information as you can and enjoy it. But, you know, it was an interesting one. We're very nervous, of course, but when you're literally just kind of talking into a camera and that camera's going live in front of, what, 30,000 people. But when you're in the zone, when you're commentating, you know, you're in the zone, and I felt like we did that well, and the comments we got back were absolutely superb. You know, you, like, Nepenthes tweeted us in. The Twitch chat was actually being not toxic for once, as it's known for being.
I was watching at the time, and it was full of positive comments. I thought it was really impressive stuff. I really enjoyed it, and I think your knowledge of the game certainly came through, which was really nice. But did you have to do sort of a lot of research? Were you already watching all the Foot Champions Series games, or did you have to sort of go back over them and have a look?
I watched the Madrid finals quite in depth, because by that point we knew that we were going to go to Berlin. I watched the Paris, the finals. I watched TASS against Sihan. I watched pretty much all the regional finals between the Xbox and PS for the main prize. And then when we knew we were going to Berlin, I went back over and looked at some of the groups, from who's qualified. And then when we got the game, the night before, we knew we were going to get the All Wolfsburg affair. That's what we were going to be commentating. So we went over and looked at Timo and Salzo, how they got there, the sort of things that they've done in the past, German winners, the first, I believe, Salzo were the first player to actually get signed to a organization, a team. So we did do quite a lot of research before I went into it. And
yeah, I was gonna say, I think that really like came across, and I know that the two commentators who do it regularly, obviously they have a lot of games to cover over a certain period. Like they do all the games, and that's a lot of games over a tournament, and there's a lot of players. But I thought it was certainly obvious you guys had put in the sort of background work to make sure that you had sort of the facts at your disposal, which was really good. And I felt like I learned a lot from the way you guys commentated on it, which was really good, about, you know, the past or the sort of history of those players and how they came to be there, which is really good. And do you play Ultimate Team much yourselves?
Yeah, we do. I think it's important, you know, any football commentator, you know, of course they've got to love the game. We both love FIFA, we play Draft, we do, you know, the Foot Champs, we've given that a go. But it's important, you know, with your knowledge and stuff, you know, if you're playing the game enough, you know the stats, you know the pace of Ronaldo, you know the height, you know the nationalities, the strong mm-hmm. foot, the weak foot. And that's going back to, you said about the Twitch chat, I think people just appreciating that, you know we've taken the time and effort to get a bit of knowledge about the game, and we put it through.
And so do both of you, or either of you actually, maybe Rich, you could cover this first. Do you have any experience of commentating? Have you done any commentary?
Not specifically commentary. I did a radio show on a radio station for about 2 years doing a sports radio show, just Premier League. Like, I'm from Yorkshire, so we covered a lot of Yorkshire teams, like live phone-ins. So that's where I got like the confidence to speak, like under pressure. And then since coming to university and meeting Brandon and really like looking that there is opportunities with this year with the foot champs and it, FIFA growing competitively to commentate over FIFA, like it just went hand in hand. I play FIFA, I enjoy like doing commentary and speaking, so this year I really did get into it. And then
perfect, yeah, that's worked out really well for you. And Brandon, is the same for you?
Yeah, for me, I feel like since about 2014 I've always been trying to get into the commentary kind of field for FIFA, but it's one of those things where you need a following, you know, you need a style or a product. But I'd say it's been good for me over those last few years. It's made me like just get the basics right. And then of course the Celtic Esports League, we've started doing that this year. You know, it was a 14-week league on Twitch TV, 8 professional clubs involved, their own 8 esports players. I was hosting that, and I was going through week in, week out, and I wasn't getting anyone reliable who I could, you know, bounce off as a co-host. And then just loved the game, and I was like, and he does broadcasting with me. I was like, Rich, come on board. And it was literally like an instant connection, and it worked well, really well. And you know, just listening back from Berlin, we could just tell that, you know, there's something there. And I think EA even loved it, and fingers crossed, you know, we're just looking forward to the future. FIFA 18, just how big competitive FIFA was this year, you know, next year's going to be huge.
I think we got one of the biggest things for us when we went backstage, for example, just after we'd finished this commentary, we got a lot of positive comments from producers, executives saying, like, we didn't expect it to be that good, and we were surprised with how much, like, you actually knew. So
yeah. Look, I'll be honest, I was watching the start of it, and obviously everyone's aware that it's just a competition for kind of almost fans of the game to get involved. And I heard you guys speak at first, and you're obviously a little bit nervous, like when you first came on air, and I was like, oh, this could be could be considerably worse than the current commentators. It probably won't. You know, they're probably not particularly experienced, but as soon as you both started, it was obvious, you know, you do have that ability to do it, and the quality was there. And I'd say it was possibly because of your knowledge of foot. I think it worked better than the commentators they currently have. So
I feel like,
well done, it did work well.
I feel like for me, the first half, more listening back to myself, I don't really enjoy listening to the first 2 minutes of myself, but that second half we came alive. But nah, Rich was very cool throughout it. I could feel all my nerves in the first few minutes, but that second half, from about 60 minutes into 90 minutes, was probably some of the best commentary I think we've done in the esports kind of industry.
Yeah, can't agree more.
It was very impressive. A couple of questions before you go, which I like to ask people. What's your favourite ever FIFA game?
Are we talking like...
You can pick any game of all time.
I'd probably say... for enjoyment purposes, FIFA 15, because I had the record breaker Ronaldo at striker.
Oh, I had him as well, actually.
That was
a particularly good
unbelievably
game.
Unbelievably fun, just to make people quit after like 15 minutes after scoring 3.
Yeah.
Mine's, which just sums me up as a person, I don't go for the good players always. Probably FIFA 13, when the finesse was very overpowered. I had a record of with Mario Shamak from Crystal Palace. I had a record of about 240 games played, 310 goals scored with Shamak, and finesses were going in all over the place from my friends and stuff and online, and they were going, how is this happening? And for me, that was just one of my my favourites.
Amazing. I love things like that. When people have players like Shamak, they've been dominating the game with. It's definitely a different FIFA back then. I don't think players like that would be able to do the business in this current FIFA. Great. And I was actually going to ask you who your sort of favourite FIFA players of all time have been, but maybe Shamak is up there.
It's a toughie, because again, that Shamak kind of just sums me up. I just enjoy the kind of low-rated players, but players that do shifts but aren't, you know, recognised.
Slightly underutilised.
Yeah, like for example, that card, that Tolisso from France. I remember about a year ago, he was like, he had all 70 stats, and now he's in the French national team in real life, and now he's an 80-something rated card, like little gems like that. But for me, I don't really have a favourite player. I appreciate now playing with the good players. Before, I was not hesitant to do it, but now I thoroughly enjoy it.
I think this year I'd probably say Martial, just regular card. It just seems so good. Like, I've used a lot of the like elite players, and I always find myself coming back to Martial just because it just seems to have got everything.
Yeah, I agree. Martial is just a ridiculous player. Very good to talk to you both. If people would like to follow your progress in the esports world, where can they do that for you, Brandon, first?
It's at bsmith_esports, I'm sure, in the tweet. For weeks, they'll put it out. And Rich's is...
at Buckley, 1998.
But before, of course, this interview ends, big thank you for getting us on, Ben. We appreciate anything with any stage, any amount of people. If it's esports FIFA, we love it. We enjoy doing it. We just want to get our profile out there. And be sure to get in contact with us because we'll happily commentate.
Perfect. Cheers, Rich. Cheers,
Ren. Thank you.
Cheers.
Well, welcome back. I hope you enjoyed the break. Some really interesting stuff there in that interview.
Yeah, it's that sort of question between, do you go for knowledge of FIFA or do you go for knowledge of kind of esports?
Yeah.
At the moment, they seem to have gone for people who are experienced in the esports world. So yeah, interesting. I think we've got some other interesting stuff, definitely. I mean,
yeah,
cracking team of the week and some really good team and season squads as well.
Yeah, I would argue in terms of player quality, this is maybe the team of the week of the year so far. Like, I can't think of a better one. I mean,
in terms of overall players.
Yeah, like one-offs, you've had striker Ronaldo a couple of times. You've had like Messi's cam card, but 92 Aguero, 92 Pogba, 90 Lacazette, 90 Royce in strike, 90 Son at cam, 88 Koulibaly, 90 Bonucci. I mean, just those cards alone are unbelievably good. I think that Son card coming very shortly after his 89 player of the month, this one looks god tier, and it's only 350-odd K on each console at the moment. Royce, again, central line. Never seen a center line Royce since...
FIFA 11 or 12.
Really hope I don't come up against him.
Back when he had 3-star skills, so...
Lacazette with a 90 rated card. Potentially going to get a team of the season.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't buy that card just because of that. He'll probably go down either way. Team of the season drops.
Yeah, Aguero and Pogba, two of the top players in the Premier League. Both of these informs look phenomenal. And Pogba's card... saw his one to watch item pretty much double in price.
Triple
in price, like overnight. So I kind of wish I'd picked one of them up when he was about 450k the other week. But now you're looking at just under $1 million, maybe a little less on Xbox.
Yeah, one of those interesting ones where he's jumped because he had that 91.
Exactly.
The one to watch has gone from like a 90 to a 92.
Yeah. Koulibaly, I mentioned, he looks like a god tier defender. Yeah,
it's almost annoying now. Like, I bought his 86, he got an 87, I bought his 87, he got an 88. I haven't sold the others yet because he's like a really good defender. And he's only like 20. I feel like someone's going to steal from me if they buy him for like 29k.
Yeah, exactly. I'd rather deprive someone else of such a good defender. Other players in the starting lineup, Vitolo looks a bit average, maybe a bit slow. He's pretty much discard. Cameron from Stoke, American player. I think Ben, you were pointing out, could link him up with Brooks, the American centre-back from the Bundesliga.
Yeah, he's pretty good on the ball, actually, which is quite a nice benefit. I mean, not the quickest, but I mean, not the best defensive stats. But he could be an interesting one if you're just building a USA team for fun. Maybe that Pulisic, and we'll talk about in a bit. You might be able to win next week as well. Just a quick note on Koulibaly. His dribbling now is you know, it's up there with Bonucci. They both got 80 dribbling. He's got really good agility as well. I mean, it's just bizarre how well-rounded he is.
His team of the season card will possibly be the best centre-back we've ever seen on FIFA.
Honestly, the fact that he's 6'5" alone.
Yeah, phenomenal card. Other players of note, a hero, Keylor Navas. Looks decent. I've not got on with Navas at all this year, though. And Fairman on the bench. I think that's his first inform. He had like a team of the group stage card or team of the knockout stage, possibly. Card looks really good. It's above 90 on all the actual relevant goalkeeping
he's
stats.
He's tall as well.
And he's pretty tall. Stefan El-Shaarawy, 86 rated left wing card. Getting closer and closer to the stats on that premium SBC that we both have.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a bit dangerous, but hopefully he still won't have the stamina either way, so he's going to be slightly less useful.
Yeah, definitely. Depreville, I think he's a striker by default. This card's a cam. Decent pace, decent shooting, and 3-star skills, not that interesting.
Yeah.
Another hero card, Jinczek.
Yep.
German striker, decent physical, bit meh.
Yeah.
Almiron, who is a player I think I've packed several times. He's a CM by default. This card's a CAM. And he has like 91 pace.
Yeah. And has like 60 defending, so he's not like terrible. Probably it would be quite nice all round if you put like Sentinel on him or Backbone or something.
Yeah.
And played him in midfield. But yeah, look, I mean, for an MLS, sort of pacey MLS midfielder, that's pretty good because they're not gifted in that area.
Yeah, definitely. Another player of note, Victor Vinicius, a Brazilian, the third 5-star skiller in this team of the week after Pogba and Elshar. Outside of that, the only thing really to know about this team of the week is that there are 3 Japanese players, which I'm not sure I've ever seen in a team of the week before. We've got Kokori and Asako, who are both golds. Look fairly similar, kind of 70s for pace, very good or fairly decent dribbling and shooting. Not on the level of the team of the season cards we've been seeing, but pretty good. And then almost exactly the same passing and physical on both of them. And they're both discard. I'm not going to use either of them, but just something to note.
Yeah. So I just wanted to go back to Vitinho, who I think we might have called Victor Vicinius or something, because that seems to be what he's known as various different places, but that's always the case with Brazilians. I kind of feel like he's one of those players. His stats aren't amazing, but he's always been quite a good player. He's got like a larger body type. He's quite quick, but has a little bit of hustle about him. Because he's got 93 finishing with Hunter and 94 shot power, as well as 89 long shots, 94 acceleration and 92 sprint speed with Hunter as well. So he looks like a card that, for discard, could actually be quite useful. And he's got 89 agility, 77 balance. His ball control isn't amazing, and his dribbling's only 85. But I think he'd actually still play quite well despite that. And then 67 stamina as well, and 61 strength aren't looking particularly good. But then he does have technical dribbler, which is quite useful. And he's also got long shot taker. So he has a few kind of tricks up his sleeve. And I think, I don't know, I've just got this hunch that he could be quite effective. So again, let us know if you use him. And I think he has quite decent composure at 75, which isn't terrible for a winger. So yeah, if you're looking for a budget player, he could be quite interesting.
Yeah, always fun to try out extra 5-star skillers. So if I'm making a budget team or a Russian league team at any point, I'll probably look to pair him up with Giuliano. Should we move on to some Team of the Season cards? Because I think the rest of that Team of the Week, you've kind of got top tier cards and pretty useless ones. So there's no one particularly else interesting to look at.
Team of the Season comes but once a year, so take full advantage of it.
Exactly. So let's kick off with the Belgian Pro League team. And I think the only place to start with this team is that Dendonka card. 90 rated, phenomenal all-round stat. Now 78 pace on card, which obviously you could boost with the chem style. That had sort of been the problem with his previous cards, because he's had several special cards that looked really nice all round, but they were just maybe a little too slow for kind of weekend league viability. But at 78 pace, you can whack that up to 90 with Shadow or Catalyst or even Hunter.
He looks like a really kind of perfect central defensive midfielder.
Yeah, I mean,
everything about him is ideal for that position.
Yeah, his in-game passing and defending stats are phenomenal, and he's got almost maxed out strength.
He's got that perfect link to Tielemans.
Yeah, Tielemans also worth mentioning for 5-star weak foot, and I think potentially maxed out long shots and shot power.
Almost, I think.
Yeah. Almost. He's another very, very nice looking card. Maybe slightly more attacking than Dendonka. Doesn't have the phenomenal defensive stats, but still very good, but also a fair bit slower.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, if he had to like 10 more pace, he'd be much more usable. It's 66. It's just below what you'd really want from a midfielder, I think.
Yeah, and I think he's just sealed the deal to move to Monaco.
Yeah, that'd be quite interesting. Maybe they'll kind of teach him to run faster.
Yeah, you never know.
And then another kind of slow midfielder, Renato Neto, Brazilian for Genk, actually has incredible physical stats. But unless he's going to properly hold his position as a defensive midfielder, I think he's too much of a liability. But yeah, it's a bit of a shame. Same with Vorma, I'd say. That's pretty much it in terms of the midfielders.
Yeah, certainly in the starting 11. I mean, one player who is worth a mention, but maybe not necessarily for the right reasons, is Teodorczyk, Polish striker from Anderlecht. He's got very, very nice stats. He's discard. He's like 22k. And I think with the right chem style, you can make him a sort of 94 rated striker in game. But he's got 2-star weak foot, 2-star skills, which I feel like the most sort of ardent
target man utiliser.
target man utiliser couldn't deal with that. I think it just limits you so much. I think the weak foot even more than the skills. I mean, I've used Icardi a bit, and you can get by with 2-star skills as long as you can sort of use their weak foot.
Yeah,
but 2-star weak foot is horrible. Looking at some of the defenders, Kara Mbodji, another Anderlecht player, you can build an almost full Anderlecht squad, it feels like at times. He looks very nice, actually. Good pace, decent height, strong physicals. Collie alongside him is also like 6'3", very, very strong, good defensive stats. His pace is really weirdly balanced. He's got terrible acceleration and very high sprint speed, which can be all right to an extent, but I think it takes
a bit too far.
It's too much on him. And he's also awful on the ball, a bit of a liability. And Asare, the other gold centre-back, is just very, very short. And I kind of, in my head, I saw his card and I assumed he'd have very high strength for some reason. But he doesn't. He's got like 73.
I think. Yeah, he'd be an excellent centre midfielder, I think. But unfortunately, kind of not useful at centre-back. Another player I actually wanted to point out, who is actually a midfielder, funny, I was saying that there aren't too many other useful midfielders, but Puzzello, on the bench is looking really, really strong. He's had a few special cards, and this one, I think, with like something like Shadow or Anchor, actually looks like a really good box-to-box midfielder. He's got really good stamina, I think, maxed out, and he'd kind of fit into any team in a sort of box-to-box role, and with the Spanish links, he'd obviously potentially quite usable.
Yeah. Outside of those players we mentioned, there's Vossen on the bench, who is way more agile than I thought, but he's got 68 pace. So as a striker, I feel like it's probably not that usable. Ishak looks sort of like Slimani Mark II, Algerian, very strong but quite slow striker. He's got surprisingly low finishing for a team of the season striker, I think about 82. Hani, another Algerian player, left-sided, four-star skills, good dribbling, decent shooting, decent passing, but again, just the pace letting him down, 76, not really enough for a wide player. And Kubo, another Japanese player, after the three in the team of the week, who's got good pace, good dribbling, but slightly let down by his shooting and passing. And
the other thing to point out is he's got 53 composure.
That's probably worth not going to be too useful. Surprisingly for this team, in general, the Silvers don't look phenomenal. Kind of Martos and Derek both look like
quite slow centre backs.
And Lay, a very slow striker. The goalies look decent. And the bronzes, DeMarta looks like a pretty good bronze card, to be fair. 83 pace, 78 dribbling, 72 shooting on him. But Ben, do you want to take a closer look at any of the cards?
Yeah, well, there was one particular card. He is a silver, and he's probably the only good outfield silver in this team. He is a bit expensive at the moment. I think a few people have tried to invest in him ahead of the upcoming weekend league requirements, which, if you don't know already, there's two tournaments again, but one of them will require three non-golds. So people are thinking, you know, get those silver investments in, but I'm not sure it's going to be nearly as big as the previous investing potential, just because people may have held on to those players. But also the other thing is that you've got the fact that it's not actually the weekend league requirement this week, so there's not so much demand, although obviously there will be that player to win through that tournament again this week, Pulisic, who looks decent. So Obradovic, potentially an option, but he is 50k at the moment. So we're looking at, with Shadow, really outstanding pace, 94 acceleration, 91 sprint speed. Terrible shooting all round, but I'm not really bothered about that if you're playing as a conventional left back. And the fact that he can link up to Dendonka and to the centre back
Mbodji
are two really, really strong goal cards from this team. So that's a good way of getting in a silver card, just a strong link triangle in the corner you could go for. And he's got 91 interceptions with Shadow, 90 marking, 96 stand tackle, 98 sliding tackle. And this is just standard. He's got an 85 agility, 84 ball control, 87 reactions and 79 dribbling, which is all really nice, as well as 82 short passing, 78 long passing, which is very good, actually, for a gold left back. And 88 crossing is obviously really good as well. 80 strength is quite decent. 86 stamina will do the job. And he's not the shortest at 5'11". The only trait he has, unfortunately, is injury prone, but we'll skim over that. And just conclude that he's a good left back and is worth having a go if you pick up those other cards for cheap.
Yeah, I think if you could get him cheaper than that, then he looks like a phenomenal left back. Better than a lot of golds. Now, anyone that's been paying close attention will realise there's one gold card that we haven't mentioned, and that is Izquierdo, the left winger, who I think I spoke about how I've packed him like more than any other player this year. His non-informed 77 rated card. And I think that was when he was in the team of the week the other week. But he's got himself a team of the season, which looks pretty tasty. He's got 99 pace by default. And unlike a lot of cards that get 99 pace on their card, he does actually have 99 acceleration and 99 sprint speed. Like, I think the ones to watch, Mane, has slightly lower acceleration, it was like 97, and potentially Aubameyang also.
Same with Gelson Martins.
Yeah.
A few others, yeah.
Which is still a bit weird. I don't understand why EA
do
that.
Yeah, not sure what the logic is.
Either way, this guy does have 99 pace. Also on card, he's got 91 dribbling and 90 shooting. And he just looks really, really strong.
Yeah.
He's got 99 agility by default. I think Sniper could be the chem style to go for on him, because his agility is 99 by default. It takes his balance up to 99, his ball control to 92, and his dribbling to 99. So I suspect he'll feel phenomenal on the ball, particularly given he's got technical dribbler trait. And in terms of his shooting, he's got 93 shot power and 99 long shots by default. Neither of those are touched by Sniper, so you've got very little stat wastage because you're not wasting points on the already maxed out long shots. And 93 shot power should be good enough, I think, mm-hmm. for a winger. And with Sniper, he gets 99 finishing and positioning alongside that. And on top of that, physically, I'd kind of would have expected him, because he's quite short, he's 5'7"-ish. I would have expected him to be pretty weak, but he does actually have 76 strength, 99 stamina, also 87 jumping and 88 heading accuracy, so he won't be completely useless if he's at the back post. He's got 4-star skills, only 3-star weak foot, and he does have the lovely combination of finesse shot and long shot taker traits.
And flair.
And flair, which is pretty useful if you're trying to make use of some back heels. So at 50k on Xbox and slightly more, just under 70 on PlayStation, I think he could be quite a nice guy to pick up, actually.
Well, undoubtedly go down, I would have thought. I mean, he is out of packs now, as we know now, these Team of the Season items, which are midweek, only last till Friday, which is a bit of a shame. But I think as more players come to the market, you'll see him drop.
Yeah, very, very nice card. Shall we move on to the Eredivisie?
Yeah, I mean, there's two kind of big midfielders. Klassen and Tornstrøm look kind of similar. Klassen with maybe slightly better defending, and then Jorgensen as a striker looks very, very good. But neither of them really kind of set the world alight, do they? They're not. Both of the midfielders are fairly attacking. They don't have 4-star skills. They're not that quick. They're not that strong defensively. And then Jorgensen up front looks good, but 3-star.
Yeah, Jorgensen, kind of in terms of card stats, looks phenomenal. 92 dribbling, 93 shooting, 91 passing, 91 physical. But as you say, 3-star, always going to let you down. And that's sort of a theme across this team, is kind of poor weak foot and very poor skills. I think there are only a couple of 4-star skillers in the team, in Elia and Larsen, in terms of gold cards at least. Larsen has a 2-star weak foot and is a bit slow. And Elia has pretty poor shooting overall, though is rapid at 95 pace.
And I think the other player that maybe is less disappointing in the midfield, though, is Villena. But we discussed him, we were talking about most consistent, so he's worth chatting about. And then, funnily enough, on the bench, you've got two very good midfielders in Ziyech and Guardado. Ziyech, obviously very strong. He's had a few informs. It's going to be good. But Guardado, I mean, he's only had one inform, but just because of the base stats that he had on his 82 rated card, this 90 just looks pretty outstanding. I mean, 89 pace, 93 dribbling, 82 defending, 80 physical, 85 shot, 92 passing, just like really nice all round.
I think just with the basic chem style, Guardado is like a 96 rated central midfielder. Yeah. He just looks so strong all round. I mean, his actual like short passing, long passing, standing tackles, sliding tackles are all kind of high 90s just with the basic chem style. He looks like a really, really strong card.
Yeah. And then Elia, as we were saying, decent winger. And then also you've got two very solid sort of left and right back options, Karstorp and Haps. If you're looking to use any other Dutch players from this team, they'll link up nicely and seem to perform, well, I imagine perform quite well. Both can be made very decent with the right chem styles. And then in terms of other players on the bench, you've got Villena, who looks kind of average, but is quite young, so bright future ahead.
Yeah.
See some interesting teams.
Very strong physical stats.
Yeah, and good dribbling and stuff, so not bad. Dolberg, sort of, again, another young, impressive player, but we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah.
In the future with those, but not particularly exciting at the moment.
And then in terms of the silvers, there are a couple. I mean, Jones looks like a very strong silver keeper, 80 in, or above 80 in every stat except speed. Lamprou, maybe slightly less so.
Yeah, also he's 5'8".
5'8"?
Yeah.
That's insane.
It's quite weird.
Yeah, that is awful. I'd be intrigued just to try him, to like see how bad that makes a goalkeeper. Okay, so that's a good warning. 5'8"
with 70 positioning and is not looking particular.
Yeah, that's a worry. Other silvers, Mokotjo, I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce that. He's South African. He looks really good. He's got very nice all-round stats, like 77 pace, 83 dribbling, 82 passing, 80 physical, 70 shooting, maybe slightly lets him down, but 75 defending, also very solid. And with the right chem style, I can't actually remember which one off the top of my head. He's a 90...
I think it's Artist.
Artist, yeah, I think you're right. He's a 91 rated central midfielder as a 74 silver card. Wow. So, yeah, he's got some very, very nice stats. Elsewhere, there is Sanchez, the Colombian centre-back from Ajax, who looks pretty good, to be honest. 76 pace, strong defending, strong physical. I think he's over 6 foot tall. So he looks decent. Eric Botegin, 88 rated, Brazilian.
Fazio, the sequel.
Yeah, Fazio Mark II. I mean, outstanding. 90 defending, 91 physical, but 43 pace means he's probably not usable. And similar, Veltman, the right back. 70 pace, pretty disappointing for a fullback. Should we take a closer look at a couple of players?
Yeah, sure. I think the one that I wanted to talk about was a guy who strong links to Agüero and therefore is very useful for sort of hybrids and getting them both into a team, you can imagine, because they're both Mexican, of course, and play for PSV, and you get that perfect link, and then putting in sort of someone like Layún at left back, or either of those two team of the season fullbacks we just mentioned. But the thing about Reno is he actually has 87 agility, which is really surprising on a centre-back who, although he's 6 foot, has 92 strength, which is obviously very good. And then he's got 95 short passing and 87 long passing and 76 vision. So on the ball, he's going to feel really good with 87 ball control and 72 dribbling as well. And then he's not slow. If you use shadow, 90 acceleration, 85 sprint speed. And then defensive stats obviously excels there. 99 marking, 99 stand tackle, 99 sliding tackle, 94 interceptions and 97 heading accuracy, as well as 92 aggression. So this is all kind of very, very solid stats for a centre-back, 85 stamina too, so not going to run out of that. So yeah, he seems like a really good card. And he's also got 89 volleys, which is quite surprising considering the rest of his shooting stats are pretty poor apart from 99 shooting and 99 shot power and 99 penalties. So yeah, an interesting shooting.
Yeah, interesting
stat selection.
Balance of stats there, because he's got 70 shooting on card, but has 53 finishing and 63 long shots.
Yeah.
So it's kind of all everything around the kind of key stats is very good, but the really important ones are not there. No, he looks really, really good. And yeah, as Ben was saying, linking him up with Guardado gives you a really strong base because you get that perfect link.
And 99 reactions, which we think is very important on centre-backs.
Yeah, absolutely. My player is actually a silver card, and he looks like a bit of a tank. He's Turkish. He's called Ünal. He plays for FC Twente alongside the South African Mokotjo. So if you wanted to make a kind of silver link, there's a strong link there, though obviously neither of the nations are particularly useful for linking outside the league. But he looks really, really strong. He's 6 foot tall, four-star. By default on the card, he's got kind of mid-70s pace, but if you whack Hunter on him, he gets 89 acceleration, 86 sprint speed. And his shooting gets pretty tasty as well. 92 positioning, 92 finishing, 97 shot power, 84 long shots, 88 volleys, 93 penalties, which is really, really nice. And given that he's 6 foot, you might sort of expect him to be a bit maybe sluggish on the ball, but he's actually got 88 agility, 78 balance, 82 ball control, 77 dribbling, which works out really, really nicely. Like that 88 agility looks awesome on a player that size. He might almost be a sort of mini Ibra, just a bit shorter and slightly less agile. And then to back that up, he's also got 90 strength, 80 stamina, which is solid, if not outstanding, and 84 jumping and 81 heading accuracy, which is pretty decent. Again, if not outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, he just looks like a phenomenally sort of well-rounded striker. I think with Hunter, he's sort of an 86 rated striker and has flair and looks like a really fun player to use. I've been quite interested to link him up with that other silver and see how he plays.
Yeah, he's also got the backed into player trait, which combined with that 90 strength and 4-star skills could be quite nice. You can kind of do scoop turns around a centre-back while holding them off, which is really effective. That sort of wraps us up on the Eredivisie. Any last comments?
No. I think it's a decent team. There's options there, and I think there are a few ways you can kind of strong link players in to your kind of regular team just to try them out. So that's quite nice, especially that Moreno Guardado link.
Yeah, let's move on to
the big boys
for this week, which is the Bundesliga. It's a really strong team, not quite on the same level as the Premier League, where I think every single player was a walkout. I think here there are one or two that aren't, potentially.
Yeah, I think there are a couple. it's quite a team of kind of two classes of player. Like, you've got the really top players who are really, really good, going for many hundreds of thousands, and then you've got another tier which are mainly left mids, which which are sort of slightly disappointing and nobody's really going to want to use.
Yeah, the Bundesliga left mid disease is really in full flow.
And they've also got a bit of a problem at centre-back. You look at Süle, the German centre-back for Hoffenheim, he's only 64 pace. You also look at the other centre-back, who's German, Orban, for RB Leipzig. They both don't have the pace to perform competitively, I think. And then you're only looking at Hummels, who even he has questionable pace at 71. I really like my centre-backs to have 75 at this stage, at least. So, yeah, they are kind of struggling at centre-back. That Sokratis will obviously be very popular at the moment.
I imagine a lot of people were kind of anticipating him getting a team of the season card, given he'd had so many informs, but alas, no. One Dortmund defender who did get in is Piszczek, who looks really good. Mm. I mean, I know you used one of his informs.
Yeah, I used his 86 and he was really phenomenal. That boosted agility is going to be key, and I think he'll be one of the better better right backs in the game, and actually would be an excellent centre back, funnily enough.
Yeah, and another right back, Philipp Lahm, legend of the game, who's now retired. A really, really interesting card. If it was like a central defensive midfielder, it would be one of the best in the game, I suspect. Yeah. But the 75 pace will probably hold him back slightly at right back. I mean, you can counter it. You can get him up to mid-80s for pace with Shadow or Catalyst or Hunter. I don't know. I mean, his defending is almost maxed out by default. Yeah. But no, he looks decent. And given that we're kind of covering all the defenders, Plattenhardt actually looks quite good.
Yeah, and I think this is the point I want to raise, because a lot of people were saying how disappointed they were because Kolasinac, normally playing left back for Schalke, in fact has a left back in form. You know, he would be the best left back in the Bundesliga, perhaps, especially with his work rates, etc., etc., because he's got high defensive, medium attacking. But I'm not so sure, to be honest. He's only got 69 agility. You're obviously going to want to boost his pace, because although it's good, he only has 79 acceleration. So that means you're probably not going to boost agility, because if you boost agility, you're not going to be able to get a full boost on his pace. So what you're looking at is putting Shadow on him, most probably, because you want to get the most out of his interceptions. But you're still only going to get 85 interceptions, and obviously you're going to be left with 69 agility, as well as 67 long passing and 68 composure. So there are a couple of key stats which I think he really lacks on, which I would say, and I think you're probably going to give us the stats on this, but I don't think Plattenhardt sort of suffers from the same problems as Kolasinac.
Yeah, not at all. I think, to be honest, Kolasinac, even though he's a left mid, he kind of looks more suited to being a centre-back. Whereas Plattenhardt looks like a really excellent fullback, to be honest. With Shadow, he gets 97 acceleration, 94 sprint speed, so he can match Kolasinac for pace. His defending, 96 interceptions, 98 marking, 99 standing tackle, 99 sliding tackle with Shadow. I mean, the only stat covered under defending that he's lacking slightly in his heading accuracy, which is admittedly poor, but 77 with Shadow is acceptable. And in his physicality, he's not weak. He's nearly 6 foot tall, 85 strength, 94 stamina, 89 jumping. On the ball, he'll be excellent. Good, a decent agility, very good balance, 91 ball control and 88 dribbling as well. And in his passing, the only area he's lacking at all is vision. Everything else is above 80. And in fact, outside long passing, everything is above 90. He's got 99 crossing, 98 free kick accuracy, 98 curve and 93 short passing. If your team is lacking a free kick taker as well as a left back, he could be the guy for you. Moving on, we've got a few left mids who look pretty terrible. Grifo in particular looks distinctly average. Guerrero, maybe all right.
Can do a job, but yeah, his stamina actually isn't that great, though, I think.
Yeah, it's not good enough really for him to be kind of bombing it up and down in a three at the back.
Which is kind of the only role you'd want him to fill. The other player, I mean, we've mentioned Kolasinac, but the main man at left mid in this team, it's got to be Forsberg. Actually looks really outstanding with Hunter. I didn't really realise, but his default sort of stats have 99 by default. I just mean his regular team of the season stats here, not his standard card. 99 agility, 98 balance, 86 reactions, but 96 ball control and 95 dribbling, which is really good. And obviously those stats allow you to quite comfortably put Hunter on him. He's not weak either, 85 strength, 99 stamina, 83 aggression, and 76 composure. So he's quite sort of, I guess in that physical area, he's quite well served. And then He's also got 99 short passing, 87 long passing, 92 curve, 94 free kick accuracy, 99 vision, and 91 crossing. So offensively, we're going to move on to shooting in a second. He's kind of sorted. And then in shooting, once you put 100 on him, he gets 99 finishing, 99 positioning anyway, 99 shot power, 92 long shots, 96 volleys, and 97 penalties. So he's pretty much maxed out on almost everything, apart from long shots in the low 90s instead. But and also, he actually has just great pace as well with Hunter, 99 acceleration, 92 sprint speed. Will, you know, completely sort you out. And he's just the perfect candidate for a Hunter chemistry style, I suppose. And with technical dribbler and backs into player, he looks like a really good card. And when I face him, he seems to sort of do fairly well against me. And I know you've used his inform, and I think that additional stat boost could do.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I've used his second inform, the 85 central line card at CAM, and he's really good. But I probably wouldn't use him in the weekend league at this stage of the game. But I think this 90 rated version of him looks, as you were saying, just phenomenal. With Hunter, those stats are really, really strong. Moving on to other players in the team, obviously you've got Aubameyang, 95 rated. Just pray you never have to face him, basically, because he's just going to be like the regular Aubameyang, but a bit better, or a lot better, with almost maxed out finishing by default, outstanding strength. And of course, that 99 pace. The player that I'd maybe even be more worried about facing is that 98 Lewandowski, though. He's one of the few players that I've managed to get to be playing around with chem styles on the kind of various foot stat sites, get like 99 position rating, and you can get him to be a 99 rated striker. But it's actually surprisingly hard. Lots of players can get to be 98 in various positions, but he's one of the few that gets 99. And he just looks like the perfect striker. I mean, with Hunter, you get almost maxed out pace, or I think you do get maxed out pace. Though you probably wouldn't want to use Hunter because he's already got 99 shooting.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, isn't it?
But both of those strikers are very, very pricey. Aubameyang is almost 2 mil on both consoles, and Lewandowski is over 1.5 on both consoles. Another player in that kind of very top tier in terms of both rating and stats and price is Arjen Robben. Slightly overlooked, maybe. Kind of, it doesn't get as much fanfare as some other players because you almost just expect him to get a card. But I mean, he's got a phenomenal looking card. I got his 88 inform as a Foot Champions monthly quite early on this year, and used him a lot, and he was phenomenal. This 95, I can't imagine how good he'd be. I think he looks really, really awesome.
And then he's got his kind of competitor in this team, Dembele, in there as well. And with that 5-star skills on weak foot, he's going to be one of the better players, better wingers in the game, I guess. Although, as we were saying, wing play not so effective. But yeah, and actually, I think it's the sort of boost to his physical that will really be crucial. He's got sort of passable strength now, so could be a real threat on the right wing.
Yeah, moving into the centre of midfield, we've got a couple of outstanding players here. Naby Keita, another player where I've used one of his informs. I've used his 86 rated third inform. But this team of the season kind of blows that one out of the water. It's plus 6 overall on top of that, or plus 5 on top of his 87 rated fourth in form. This guard, just with basic, is a 97 rated central midfielder with 99 agility, 99 balance, 96 ball control, 99 dribbling, 99 vision, 99 short passing, 99 long passing, 99 stamina, 93 positioning, 97 finishing, 99 shot power, 99 interceptions, 96 standing tackle, 91 sliding tackle, 99 aggression. You get the picture.
Wow. There's a
lot of 99s in there. This card looks really, really good. And his price seems to be steadily declining. I think he was about 700 or 800k on both consoles when these cards first got released on Friday. As of Saturday evening when we're recording, he's dropped to just under 600 on Xbox and a little over 600 on PlayStation. Seems to be a steady decline. I would, if you're looking to pick him up, I'd monitor his price because he is just a pretty unique card, actually. I think kind of only N'Golo Kante really rivals him in terms of that all-round statage in midfield this year. His price probably could fluctuate a bit, so.
Yeah, I think the only other player to mention in that kind of mould is in this team week as well, is Stindl, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I used Stindl's 86 rated Man of the Match card, which I thought was phenomenal. I think I had him potentially with Shadow. Possibly because his shooting on that card was really, really good. This card has 96 shooting by default, so you probably don't really need to touch that with the chem style. The only stat that's below 94 is his penalties at 81. All his other shooting stats are between 94 and 98. So that's insane stats across the board. And his dribbling as well, 90 agility, 92 balance, 99 reactions, 97 ball control, 93 dribbling. That's just all by default. And this is on a guy who's pretty much 6 foot tall with 84 strength. I mean, a lot of people have pointed him out as a kind of overlooked card. But he could be one of the best sort of super subs maybe in the game. If you put Shadow on him, then his lowest positional rating across the field is a 93 at centre-back, 94 at full-backs, and 95 everywhere else except EDM.
Well, so he's kind of like the ultimate utility man. You can just drop him in wherever you need him.
Yeah, so no, he looks very, very good. He definitely went extinct for a while yesterday. He's currently not extinct. He's at about 140k. We have just had a bunch of lightning rounds. It may be EA tweaked the pack weight, potentially, because he, as well as Anthony Modeste, who's maybe worth a mention, were extinct for a while yesterday. Modeste is a very, very strong-looking card.
Slightly let down, I think, by his 79 stamina. For me, like at this stage in the game, when you look at team of season players, you'd expect better stamina than that. And although the only thing to say is obviously he's a real physical presence who has agility and 99 strength, as well as finesse shot trait, which I quite enjoy. But the 3-star skills and 3-star weak foot, I just don't think that's really passable. You know, at this stage, you want players of a bit more quality on the ball than that.
Yeah, definitely. Just the 3-star weak foot, I feel, is almost a tipping point between 3 and 4. Like, at 3-star weak foot, if they don't have 4-star skills, then you're just so limited because you kind of have to go down their strong side, yeah, exactly. And there's not much you can do to kind of trick back and forth. So, yeah, the 3-star, it's something I do struggle with as well.
So the last sort of big player I think we wanted to discuss, obviously we should give a shout out to Timo Werner, who nobody will ever want to play. We've discussed Baumann previous week because he was in the team of the season most consistent. But it's Thiago who is the last player, and wow, he looks a really good card. I sort of have never given him credit for how well-rounded he is.
Well, I think that's because this is his first card that is well-rounded. Even on his 90-rated team of the knockout stages card, he only had 73 defending by default on the card. Mm. That's been boosted up to 81 on this card, and I think that really makes the difference.
And I mean, he has a lot of special cards, so you can see why he's sort of a monstrous card that he is now. But yeah, with Shadow, he's like a 92-rated centre-back, which just seems bizarre.
just imagine, playing your 5-for-8, 5-star skill attacking midfield player as a centre-back, and he's officially 92 rated there.
Yeah, I mean, he's another player. You know, you were mentioning Keita earlier. I mean, with certain chemistry styles, he completely, you know, the amount of 99s he has. If you take Maestro, for example, you're looking at, on passing, 99 vision, 99 free kick accuracy, 99 short passing, 99 long passing, 99 curve, 99 agility, 99 ball control, 99 dribbling, 99 positioning, 99 shot power, 99 long shots, 99 volleys, and then 99 jumping. And you're also looking at some slightly worse stats with 94 balance, 95 reactions, 95 stamina, 92 interceptions, and 92 finishing. And the other stats are, you know, only in the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, and you say that's with Maestro. A lot of those stats weren't even boosted. Like,
yeah, that's a good point.
Agility, yeah. Dribbling, short passing, long passing, curve, vision. Long shots, volleys, positioning, jumping, slightly weirdly. They're all 99 just by default. And I mean, yeah, with Shadow, it's no surprise he's a 92 rated centre-back because you can get him up to 99 acceleration, 89 sprint speed, 99 interceptions, 92 heading accuracy, 84 marking, maybe a slight disappointment there. It's probably his only weak stat. 97 standing tackle, 98 sliding tackle, which is just insane.
This is ridiculous.
And given how good this guy is going to be going forward, a bit like Keita though, he is on the pricey side, just under 700k on both consoles at the moment. Again, that you would expect, I think that should settle lower, but how low he goes is pretty hard to predict at this stage.
Great. Apart from Fabian, who on another day might have been one of our picks, he's a nice little card. Go have a look at his stats. Because, yeah, very, very solid. A few decent Mexicans.
Another
as well.
Mexican, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But moving on, I think, because, you know, that was the team of the season in a very large nutshell there. But, yeah, looks strong. What have we got this week in terms of reviews? Are you bringing a player of the week or informed impression?
Yeah, I think I could maybe bring a sort of player of the week, if you fancy. I mean, we did have a question earlier. Part of it was, what are your favourite team of the season cards so far?
Yeah.
Mine, without a doubt, is Christian Eriksen. Admittedly, I haven't used many team of the seasons going forwards, The only other sort of attacking player that I've used was Diego Costa. So I actually packed him. But Christian Eriksen is something else. I've used his 88 card extensively this year. Like, I had maybe kind of 200 or 300 games with him and was a massive fan. And this 93 is just the same but better. I mean, he's got 5-star weak foot, 4-star skills, which is a really nice combo. And I'm playing him at centre mid. But I am just using him with Hunter because I think, again, in my review of the false nine formation earlier, I was talking about how you want to have at least one kind of goal scorer in midfield, and he gets a lot of goals for me from midfield. I think he's got almost a goal a game in about over about 20 matches played entirely in the weekend league so far. And with Hunter, he gets 99 acceleration, 92 sprint speed, 99 positioning, 99 finishing, 99 shot power, 99 long shots, 94 volleys stacking there, and 96 penalties. Wow. So kind of his finishing on either foot is phenomenal, like really, really impressive. He does have the long shot taker trait. He doesn't have the finesse shot, which is unfortunate, but he does have technical dribbler and flair, as well as playmaker, which all, I think, contribute to his all-round play. The only weak point of this card, offensively, is probably his agility. And, I mean, it's 88, so if an 88-rated stat is your weak point, you're doing all right. And you don't notice it too much. I feel like that was more of a problem on his previous inform, because there he only had 83 agility. And I think the plus 5 that he's got for this card makes a real difference. But then the rest of his dribbling stats are all well above 90. Likewise, his passing is almost entirely maxed out. He's only lacking slightly in crossing and long passing. So yeah, he's been a really excellent card. I picked him up for about 450k when he dipped slightly the other day. But he's up around 520 on Xbox at the moment, closer to 600 on PlayStation. So he's not a cheap card, but he is really outstanding.
So clinical, I imagine.
Yeah, and actually his free kicks as well. He's got maxed out free kick stats, so you'd expect them to be good, but they are really, really excellent. I think I scored my first 3 direct free kicks that I took with him.
Could be that finesse style free kick trait.
Yeah, potentially. He does get a lot of curve on them. I've found, ever since using his 84 rated card, actually quite early on this year, his free kicks are really clinical for me.
Yeah, definitely.
I think the driven free kick with about 3 bars of power is particularly effective. So yeah, that's just a speedy run through Team of the Season Christian Eriksen. And we'll look to bring you a Team of the Season review at least one a week whilst it's continuing.
Hopefully we will. And a quick player that I wanted to mention, just because he's been excellent, I'll try and run through his stats pretty quickly because it is kind of important. This player is Lothar Matthaus, the German legend. Really excellent box-to-box player. And actually, I think one of the few genuine box-to-box legends that you can use. The reason I'm suggesting people may have overlooked him is because when you look at him with various different chemistry styles, such as Anchor, which you might want to use on him, maybe Engine, he really ends up losing out in certain areas, and he's the perfect candidate for Basic. Basic is one of the few chemistry styles that actually boosts acceleration a little bit, and it boosts agility, but it also boosts strength. So those stats with Basic work out quite well for him. So he's got 93 acceleration, 84 sprint speed, 79 agility, as well as 80 strength, and he already has 93 aggression. So he's quite a sort of tenacious player, but he's also fairly nippy, but he's also not that weak. So he's kind of in the kind of Keita mold, I'd say. He's a bit stronger defensively than Keita, a bit more physical, and he's got phenomenal defensive stats. So 91 interceptions, 92 marking, 96 standing tackle, and 95 sliding tackle, which is really well-rounded. And then he's also got outstanding passing, all in the sort of mid to low 90s for that, apart from curve and not great crossing, but that's not really that important. And then his long shots are phenomenal. Like, he really feels good. Like, when you take a shot with him, you know it's either corner or it's a goal. Is that kind of situation. I was quite surprised by that because his stats are really good. 96 shot power, 93 long shots, but I wasn't expecting them to be quite as good as they were. And he's also quite clinical with 86 finishing and 91 positioning. So if you're considering you need a box-to-box player, you know, you can't really link your regular players in there. This guy is a legend, will absolutely do the job. My only criticism is 89 stamina. With his high work rates, you maybe want just a tiny bit more. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my only experience of him this year was coming up against him in the weekend league several months back. And it just left me a bit scarred. He was terrifying to play against.
Yeah, he's really tenacious and he's a great player. I think someone you don't see very often either, and 600k is not terrible at this stage. He may even go down a bit more once you see some more effective players in all the leagues in the midfield area.
Yeah, well, that sort of wraps us up for this week. It's been an even longer episode than usual.
A marathon episode.
Yeah, and well done to any of you that have made it this far. And we really appreciate you listening right to the end.
Yeah, if you stuck with us. I haven't even stuck with us, so it's impressive. Yeah.
So all that remains is to say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
If you've enjoyed this podcast and you'd like to subscribe, then just go to subscribe.footweekly.droppages.com. That's subscribe.footweekly.droppages.com, and all the links will be there.